Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
Hi, welcome to the Desert Sanctuary podcast. We are glad that you are here. I'm Laura Forehand, and I'm here with Carl Forehand. Say hello.
Hello.
And we are back again to discuss Carl's latest book called Campfires in the Desert, which is a deconstruction travel guide. And I just want to reiterate that it is a guide. It is him putting down into, you know, his experience or our experience with deconstruction, but it is not a hard and fast, you know, this is what to expect and this is how to deal with X, Y, and Z. It is just kind of almost like a memoir of, you know, our deconstruction journey, but also realizing that we're still deconstructing. We're very open to, you know, learning new things, and we're not rigid anymore. Yeah. So
one of the things is that a lot of people deconstruct to become, and they become more progressive, which is great, which is fine. But there's more of us, or there's some of us at least, that want to go further. We want to ask more questions. We wanted to deconstruct further. Mm-hmm. And some of us even believe you might want to deconstruct your faith forever and keep deconstructing whatever's not true and what's mm-hmm. not beneficial and so on. So this, but when you do that, one of the things you're going to encounter is your trauma. Mm-hmm. You're going to run into your wounds and things like that and some hard work. And so this book, we're trying to stress that. We lead it off talking about trauma mm-hmm. and dealing with your trauma and so on. So mm-hmm. that's what we're doing.
So chapter 2 is called Get Away From Your Trauma. And you start with a quote from Peter Levine. And it says, trauma is a fact of life. It does not, however, have to be a life sentence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do you want to expand on that a little bit more? And like the title of the chapter is kind of intriguing, Get Away From Your Trauma. So can we get away from our trauma? Is that a possibility, especially when you feel like you have been so traumatized?
Yeah. In my opinion, not inside organized religion, because organized religion tends to ignore it. Mm. Tends to tell you not to pay attention to your body because mm-hmm. that's sinful, and it doesn't generally have good practices for dealing with our trauma. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a life sentence. When we deconstruct, we realize we have some power to understand our trauma and work through it, mm-hmm. which is hard work. We think it's worth it, and we've found some healing and progress and so on, but I love Peter Levine mm-hmm. and his work.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to start by reading the first paragraph of chapter 2. And it says, when I stepped away from the pulpit and my role as a pastor, my immediate reaction was to find solace in a larger church. I soon started looking for ways to reconnect with ministry experiences. Yet despite this new church aligning better with my theological beliefs, I understood that churches often share a similar foundation and frequently face the same systematic challenges within organized religion. So the question that came to mind when I was reading that was, why do we, and I use we in a general way, yeah. But I would probably be more specific and say, so why do pastors jump back into ministry or get busy doing something?
Right. So it happened to me twice, right? Mm-hmm. Between our second and third church, mm-hmm. right? We spent a couple of years, an hour south of here, trying to fit in, trying to find a place to minister. We did some Dave Ramsey stuff and led some of that stuff, led a study, a Bible study, and so on. I think, the pastors don't generally have time for work with mental health or trauma and things like that. And we solve that by, we even preach about being doers of the word, not hearers only. So it's our cover, it's our go-to, just like people, abuse work in other ways, in other professions. But you want to be, especially when you find something's wrong, like my deconstruction, there's something wrong. And we're feeling that in our second church, right? And then, so I go to this other church, say, well, I could fit in there and we could help fix the problem, maybe. And then after we totally just stepped down from the third church and then went to this other big church, we found systemic problems there. So I still think, well, I could be a coach, I could work, I could do some things that bring the church around and help the church get further down the road. But just realize organizations don't like to change and there's systemic problems with all of them. But pastors tend to be one of the worst at, I got to do something, I got to get start a website, I got to have a group, I need a following. We're real prone to that.
I think though that, as we talked about in the last session, listening to your nervous system that is trying to tell you something. So if you have this, anxiety or even overwhelming anxiety to jump back into something, maybe continue to take that step back and look at why do I feel the need to do that? It is it, that I really have something to offer, which I think is very true, but also is this need for approval, something I need to examine more. I mean, I think that's true for me, in my profession. Sometimes, especially when the summer hits, I have a hard time just letting go. Like, I still want to learn and I still want to be doing. And yeah, so I do think it's not just a, it's not just a ministry thing. It's not just a church thing. It can definitely be something that is a part of every profession. Something else you said later in the chapter was like personal healing may take longer than expected. And so to that, I was on the side of your book, I wrote the uncomfortableness of like the healing process of personally like listening to your nervous system and moving through that instead of sidestepping it. The uncomfortableness of that can cause us to jump back in, right? Because momentarily it relieves that anxiety.
Like I'm
If I
doing
can,
something.
right, if I can jump back in and do something. And again, I think that's something, we have to examine about ourselves. We're not saying that any of this is bad. I think it's just human nature. It's like we want to feel accepted, important, needed. All those things are just part of our human makeup. But I think like diving into that a little bit more, the maybe the trauma around that, I think is really important to understand why we do those sorts of things. But anyway, so talk about your early deconstruction.
So as we kind of mentioned before, there was a went to a big church after the second church. It is now a church that I would not go to because the more I found out about how the sausage was made there, and the new pastor there is really toxic. But then for a few years, we went to rebuild another church after that. And then after that church, when we stepped down, we spent time trying to fit in, trying to find something to do at that third, at that other big church. But what we found out is it's nearly impossible to heal when you're involved in like a church in all of its activities, because it centers around the organization and what they want to accomplish, Very rarely, right out of the box, are they willing to trust you and let you do something. Sometimes they're looking for a specific type of person, and you may not fit into that mold, whether it's not a moral thing or anything like that. Churches tend to like the more professional person, the person that is a lawyer or something like that, or a school administrator. I have an example of that one. And so it's kind of hard to fit in, and just it's really, really hard to heal your trauma when you're still involved in that. And that's what we experience. And most of the rest of that chapter, Cindy Wong Brent kind of encouraged us to take a year off from religion, and we finally did. We pulled back and went to the Methodist church across the street, but there were still triggers. There was still hard to heal when you're in that system, and all the activity is around making the organization successful and not necessarily digging down to find your root psychological issues you need to deal with.
And keeping you busy, really. I mean, being busy, like I know for me personally, keeps you from having to deal with the things that are really important for you to deal with. You know, I mean, I have talked about that several times on this podcast and other podcasts. You know, if I could just stay busy, then I don't have to deal with my trauma, right? Because being busy takes my mind away from, you know, whatever trauma that I'm needing to deal with. It takes my mind away from that and focuses it on something else. And you know, you mentioned in chapter two that if we are honest, I think we can recognize that the Western Church and most others is also not adequately structured to heal our trauma. So why do you think that's true?
A lot of reasons, and I took this from this chapter, most of it from a blog that I wrote several years ago called Why Churches Don't Generally Heal Our Trauma. And so, would you like me to go through those? Okay. So, number one is their schedule crowds out healing time. The schedule, some, small groups have a lot of success with stuff like this. Like you have a friend and you talk to your friend listens. If they're an empathetic witness and so on, good way to heal, connecting with people. We have a deep need for connection. But then if we don't heal our trauma, there's just no, nothing in the schedule for that at a church, right? You have the sermon. You have the worship service on a specific time. Man, that's the main event. You have some classes from time to time, and some different churches do that different. But then they have activities, and they have trunk or treat, and they have things that you got to do, and that takes energy and volunteers and money. And then most of the money's spent on the building and the salaries for the people that run the church. So the schedule just crowds out that time that you need for. I don't think I've ever seen a church service canceled so that we could listen and talk to each other, right?
I mean, and to be fair, like you would try to do that when you were, I specifically remember our third church, and you would, you know, say, okay, you know, we're not doing things, we're not sticking to the order of service, you know, and
Just move the chairs around
move the
or
chairs around.
something.
Just, you know, let's start with like just getting in groups and praying for one another and like people.
They're okay with it one time.
Yeah, but to well, and I was just listening to like an online mini course, and our brains are set up to like really adhere to patterns. And so, and that's what the church service is, if you think about it. We do the same thing week in and week out in the same order, you know, including the songs we pick out,
Yeah, it
right?
makes people feel
It
comfortable.
does, it does, it does. And so anytime we deviate from that, it's going to cause a little anxiety in people. But instead, again, you know, instead of like tapping into why is this creating anxiety? I mean, why can't I just like go, okay, well, today we did things a little bit differently.
Yeah, it makes everybody
It
uncomfortable.
does.
And to say that we're, going to take some time off and work on ourselves and heal and so on means that we got to admit we're not perfect, right? Can't portray that image we practice and perform and all that stuff that we do on Sunday morning or Saturday night or whatever.
So yeah, we don't, the schedule does not, it really does crowd out healing time. We have a certain schedule and we have a certain, I mean, we start church at 10, we need to be done at 11. And some of that I think comes from the congregation, right? I mean, if you're a football fan on Sunday, you want to be home in time to watch your favorite football team play. So, or you want to get to the restaurant before every other
We
church
complain
member.
that the service is too long. We also complain when it doesn't have enough
Meat to it.
substance and meat.
All right. So after that, you said it is not designed for honest dialogue. So what do you mean by that?
I just don't think, I mean, so what I've noticed after being out of religion is I watch people on in sports situations and so on, how they talk about God and so on. And it's just almost, 100% that God gets thrown into conversations that doesn't even need that. And what we do is we say everything good that happened, that was God. Everything bad that happened was my fault. I didn't do something right, or I don't have enough faith or whatever. So, but the programming again is just not designed for honest dialogue. You have one person speaking to you for the most part, and they say they're open and they listen, but they generally don't, right? They're in that authoritative position.
That's a power differential for
The
sure.
power differential and all that. There's just not any time, but it's also just the programming of the whole thing is not honest dialogue. Like I have some doubts, and this eternal conscious torment, that doesn't seem right. Can we talk about it? Well, not, well, this is the official position of the church. And why are you making trouble? Why are you doing this, Carl?
I mean,
Why are you
I'm
questioning?
thinking back because, there's something that you mentioned in I don't know how many of your books, but about, baking the cake. We are in Pride Month, so baking the cake for, the homosexual couple, and you like talked about that for a while and then said, if I was that baker, I would bake the cake. And man,
Yeah, one guy's head just about exploded.
about exploded.
And yeah, we
And
just
so, and then
felt.
you got lectured for like an hour and a half, and unfortunately or fortunately, that was the beginning of the end of just basically our ministry.
Yeah, I even see this in coaching. Someone decides they want to be a coach, and I recognize that feeling of wanting to help people, of wanting to help bring people along and help them succeed. But a coach generally has to live kind of a false life. They have to pretend that everything's okay, that they're doing well so that they can coach you. And I would rather have a coach that says, "Man, I've had a hard day. It sucks right now." And talk through the process of why I'm feeling this anxiety or why I'm sad or why I'm upset. And to talk through that. And you and I can do that. We're getting better, I would say, at it, right? But just our systems aren't designed for honest dialogue. Our corporations aren't that way. They don't have honest dialogue between the power differentials, like you mentioned. And generally in a church, there's very little of that honest dialogue, right? You're just causing problems if you bring things up.
Very true. Next, you mentioned it bypasses our trauma, and we kind of touched on this a little bit in chapter one, but go into what you mean by it bypasses our trauma.
Yeah, so first of all, organizations like churches draw in the traumatized.
Of course.
Has
We're
life
here to
been
help you,
shitty? Has life been shitty? We can help it, and God, you're a new creation, and so on. And it claims to help, but it seldom does.
Or it helps on a very surface level, right? It, like you said, they don't have time to dig deep.
And it becomes, so what it becomes is a sanctuary, and it's a sanctuary because it shelters us from the outside world. It makes the outside world other, and so we otherize other people, and then we kind of take an honest look at ourselves inside, and we say, well, but I still feel something's not right, and this isn't getting better. I'm not really healing. And so we use spiritual phrases and things to bypass our trauma. Well, we can't understand God, so we don't know what he's doing. We don't know what he's going to
His
do,
plan is perfect.
but his plan is perfect, and he has a plan and purpose for you. And I would, from 20 years of being a pastor, I would say 95% of the church members don't know
Oh,
what
yeah.
the plan or purpose is for their lives. They can't figure it out, so they adopt the plan and purpose of the
Of
church.
the organization.
But none of that has time to seriously address our trauma, but it does bypass it. It does give us an excuse not to mess with us, because God's going to do something miraculous, right? He's going to do something we couldn't imagine. And even when things do get a little better, we give all the credit to God, not our hard work that accomplished it most of the time.
I think, we've been watching the Women's College World Series, and yeah, that's the thing when they just like give all the glory to God, and I'm like, so you didn't work your tail off
All your life.
all your life. Your parents didn't take you here, there, and everywhere for
Hundreds of
traveling
thousands of
softball.
dollars.
So, you didn't practice
None of that
for
went into
hours
it.
on end. It was just all God. I'm like, I have a really hard time with
If it
that.
was, then someone could just come out of the stands, join your team, enroll in the college, and
But we learn in churches that, you're not supposed to think more highly of yourself, right? So we can't sit there and go, yeah,
Can't
I
take
worked my
credit.
ass off and my parents sacrificed so much to get me where I am today. We can't say that because then that seems very haughty and, that we're being very self-indulgent and bragging and, which is just ridiculous because the truth is you did work your ass off and your parents did sacrifice a ton of,
Their
their
lives,
own lives,
basically their lives,
right, to get you where you are today. And we're not gonna acknowledge that. Instead, we're going to, give it to this higher power that may or may not exist. I mean, I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying we don't know.
And
So,
the parents accept that bypassing, and
oh, 100,
even
yeah.
though that player never said, "I want to thank my mom and dad for all this sacrifice they've made for me," their parents will accept that and that dismissal of everything they did, because they have a religious agenda. I'm so proud of my daughter for speaking up about Jesus, the fourth man in the fire or whatever. It's kind of ridiculous, but it mimics what the church does also. We just
And I think you have to take a step back, and we talked about this because you mentioned that fourth man in the fire. We have to take a step back and go, okay, so God was there for you, but not for everybody else. Or God was there for you in this softball game. He really, really wanted you to win this softball game, but he didn't want to cure that child of cancer, or he didn't want to, save that person from drowning. Or, it's just, it's kind of gross.
Yeah,
It's
it
just
is.
kind of gross.
And the person with no athletic ability, the person that is unpopular, the kid that was right next to you in class, what about them? God really only cares about the high profile athlete or the people in church that are important and smooth and shiny and all that. It's just a lot of bypassing.
It is. So, we talk about this next subheading a lot, that church is an organization.
And people say, "Well, yeah, it's an organization." Well, what if it's not organized? And they start making stupid comments like that. But 70% of what comes in, as far as money and so on, goes to the church, the buildings and salaries, 70%. of the money is used for that. I think most churches have good intentions. They want to help the poor. They want to do things like that. But most of their money's going to the building, salaries, and putting on the show once a week. But the rule is, and this is just something that I've been saying for a long time, is the organization always comes first. When you go to work at your job, the company comes first. You're not primary, no matter what they say. Everyone can be replaced, is what they used to tell me. And if you don't change, we're going to replace you. But hurt people within those organizations harm other people. The organization claims to care for us, but only after their needs are met, or only as we're progressing towards their goals. And they don't state it exactly like that, but that's how it happens. I was a pastor for 20 years and accumulated some trauma, but basically found the church was kind of ineffective at they were and they're an organization. You can start a home church and it's real organic first. If it has any success though, then it becomes an organization real quickly, and however many people that is that takes for us to go, oh, we need a building. We need, organization. We need
We need committees.
committees and all that kind of stuff. And so it becomes an organization. And if you question, if you don't go along, then it's why are you making this trouble? Don't you believe in our purpose and our goals and what God's trying to do through us and what God's trying to do through you? So anyway, in many ways, it hinders it because it's an organization. And I think if we would just recognize that and stop spiritualizing all that stuff, like we're doing God's work and things,
Well, so are the other billions of churches around the world. So which one is right is what I want to say, something in that subheading that I wanted to touch on, you wrote, "It is unusual for a pastor to possess the appropriate training to provide counseling for individuals dealing with severe trauma. Even if they do, time constraints often impede their ability to do so." And I think that's very true because when you were a pastor, I won't speak to your schooling, but as far as I knew, you didn't have a degree in psychology, you didn't have a degree in counseling. I don't know if you had like a class or two, but still, does that make you an effective counselor? But then also you said something I thought was interesting. They should focus on hiring counselors rather than theologians, as in churches should, before they invest in coffee shops to draw new members. But here's my thing about that statement. Might we run into the risk of Christian counselors doing the very things that brought us trauma? So, like, I think you have to be careful. Like, I'm not saying churches shouldn't have counselors and stuff like that, but if we have Christian counselors that are just going to bypass or throw a scripture at us,
I have an example.
as the, cure all, then I think we're just in that traumatic cycle.
And I have an example of that when I did this spiritual leadership counseling. Spiritual leadership coaching, maybe it was what it's called. It's a big, long, involved process we went through. A lot of good that came out of it. But they would try to lead you to the answer to everything is read your Bible, pray, and study more. Read your Bible, go to church, and pray. That was the conclusions. They definitely weren't trauma-informed therapists. And I agree with you. Biblical counselors are almost worthless. It's more spiritual bypassing. It's not a professional getting to the root of your trauma. And they're definitely not trauma-informed. They don't understand even their own dysfunction. I know I didn't as a pastor. But I was always trying to, we did the tried to do the lust thing with men and go through that involved process. You get very little involvement. The church members aren't really interested in that. And then the pastors aren't prepared. They don't have the education or the understanding to do all that. They're theologians. They're job is defending the scriptures,
Right,
right?
right.
And convincing you how to act and live and all those things.
And
They're,
convincing you to trust those scriptures
yeah.
for all the answers.
Yeah, and that's so all the answers are in there. We just need to go to the Bible, right? Or, however your church is geared. But yeah, there is a danger of biblical counselors, which in general are pretty ineffective,
Right.
that they're going to lead you towards the organization's goals, right? Why don't you just get more involved? Why don't you
Right.
do some more,
Get
right?
busy.
Get busy,
Get busy, then you don't have time to think about
Right.
all that stuff
Yeah.
that's, bringing you so much anxiety and trauma in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that, that's a good point.
I experienced that a lot because I came to the ministry mid-life, thirties, in my thirties, right, or something like
Something
that.
like that.
And so I was always looking for the silver bullet, the answer. I wanted to talk to someone that's been there longer, done more, and said, "What did you do? How do you do it? And what's the answer?" And I found very little answers from those guys, those other guys in ministry. They would sometimes give me a way to cope, but generally, they weren't very helpful, in
Right.
healing my wounds and so on.
So next you talk about it doesn't allow for open theology. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the assumption, and now I call theology assumptions. So, but the assumption is that our assumptions are permanent. They're very seldom change our doctrine. We're in the Southern Baptist Convention, the Baptist Faith and Message, very seldom changed, about two or three times in its history that's changed at all. Not a lot of questions allowed. The primary teacher, the main pastors expected, we're just expected to follow them. They're leading us. They have the information, which may have been true on the prairie. When they started a church out on the prairie, and some guy came from a distant land and had some information to share with us we couldn't get ourselves, but it's not like that anymore. And we consider the assumptions of our specific place we find ourselves in. We assume those assumptions are correct, and when we find a minor difference, that's okay. We go, well, we think this a little more. And we adjust to that, but no big adjustments. No state being open is not one of the attitudes, that they respect. But I think it's better to say, well, I may be wrong. And that's kind of the question that started me on deconstruction was, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? And I don't think God can't, if God is God, God can handle my question, right? But that doesn't go over well in churches because my church is better, even though it's slightly different than the one down the street. We got it. God is on our side and we're right. So that's what it likes to proclaim.
And that whole my church is better is something that, I've mentioned several times on podcasts, is that if your church is better, the fact that there is trauma and abuse going on in any church should cause you to stand up against that.
And there is some going on in your church.
Yes, you just do not know about
You
it.
don't.
Or, I feel like it's kind of like, this is a terrible analogy, but it's kind of like grooming. It happens slowly, right? And so even you may be being traumatized and not really know it, because slowly over time, that's the messaging has gotten through, and
Yeah.
it's just so subtle
Your opinion
sometimes.
doesn't matter that much, right? It's the pastor's primary job to say what we think and feel.
So next subheading is like a fish standing on the beach. And you talk about this a lot
I
because it's
do.
from Rob Bell and his Robcast. So, talk a little bit about that. I think if people really want to know more about it, they can probably listen to so many of your episodes on the Desert Sanctuary. But for the sake of time and going back, tell us a little bit about that subtopic in this chapter.
Yeah, and I'm not really promoting or anything. Rob Bell, I liked his last book, The Everything Spiritual, I think is what it's called. But I really liked this podcast when I came across it. It's like a fish standing on the beach, and it talks about just imagine a fish that stands up and looks back at the water, and the water represents the conditioning that we've had. And I think that's important for everybody to do.
Kind of goes back to what I was saying about grooming. I know that's a really harsh like analogy, but maybe what you're saying is a little softer and people can.
Yeah, just get outside of the organization. And we began to heal quickly after we stopped going to church, which is the opposite of the message they send. But it was because we got some perspective. We stepped back and looked at it from a distance, and we thought about how all the behind the scenes things we experience, but also we could get perspective. And that when you're in the water, you really can't see. It's just busyness. It's all the things, all the good chemicals that come through my body when I go to church and all those kind of things. But when we take a step back, we can get perspective. We see the water we're swimming in. We recognize the conditioning that happened to us and all those things. So I love that episode, and it'd be worth your time to go listen to that and hear what he had to say.
And some of that conditioning too, it's not just all inside that church building. It, goes back
Culture.
generations, culture, things we've talked about even in the last episode. So finally, you in this chapter two with bare bones, and you talk about how you love to watch, which is very true. I will attest to this right now that he likes to watch shows where they tear everything down, mostly. They keep what's good, but they tear down a lot of stuff.
And so that show was called Bare Bones. There's another one I listen to now. I can't remember the name. And I watch it late at night. I just like that process of transformation and so on. But you can't, well, one thing they always do when they're remodeling the house is they kick the people out of it, because you can't. I've seen examples of when people try to remodel their house while they're living in it, and it just doesn't work.
There's an episode of The King of Queens that's like that,
Yeah.
where they Doug and Carrie stay in the house and it's kind of a mess,
Yeah, you just don't ever do a good job of remodeling when you're living in the house. It's just patchwork, and it doesn't seem to get better. And maintaining the house, takes precedent over, let's take out the things that aren't working or ugly and get all that stuff out, and then let's just put back the good stuff, the new, and maybe sometimes new stuff that is needed, for whatever. So it's just an object lesson kind of, right?
You'd said in that particular section, a few good things came from attending church all those years, but most of it can be replicated elsewhere without all the fuss and bother of going to a building to support an organization. So, can you give us examples of that? Like what in your opinion can be replicated elsewhere?
So if you like sermons, and sermons definitely do something for us. Good speaker. I love good speakers.
We're going to a conference tomorrow and we are excited about listening to some good speakers.
When I hear someone has well-organized thoughts and they're effective at presenting it, it moves us, right? It affects us, and it motivates us and all those things. Love that. But if I can get the best sermons in the world online, right, for free in this age we live in. And I know that there's all the rhetoric about a pastor and a shepherd, and we've got to listen to our shepherd. And really, that just keeps the indoctrination going through. So, sermons are one thing, music's the other. Music and worship services do something to us chemically, right? Just like a concert. And so, whatever music I like to listen to, I could go to a concert live. I could, once a quarter instead of every stinking week, I could listen to Spotify. Sometimes I'll have the music I like to listen to on while I'm doing something else, That's all available to us. Wasn't again, it wasn't on the plains, right? Out in the middle of
Right,
nowhere,
right.
when a banjo, and a piano and whatever would move us because we weren't used to feeling that all the time. We
Right.
can get that anywhere today. But also better counseling. If you want to pursue religious education, you can do that online and you probably get tons of stuff. And this summer, for example, with trauma-informed stuff, we're doing several things, going to several conferences, doing several things online where we're going to learn some big key
And some
things.
of them are like free. Like we just
Yeah.
did one the other day that was all day and it was free.
Right.
Like so there are things out there for you to continue learning and growing, and you don't have to, plop down a bunch of money for.
And like I say, we can get some good things within religion, and
Sure.
some of that was good, and some of that community that we got, which we can get a lot of, and community is the other thing that we can get a lot of different places, not just in that one narrow place where everybody agrees with me. Now, maybe it's some community where everybody doesn't agree totally.
I think it's so interesting how we've decided that church is the only community that matters.
Right.
I just think that's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
So chapter two, this is packed full of a lot of stuff. Really good stuff. I like how you broke it down and everything. And for those that are listening, just a reminder that the book is called Campfires in the Desert, a Deconstruction Travel Guide. It is available on Kindle for 99 cents. So, wow, that's a great deal. And the audiobook is $5.99. Like I said in our last podcast, I have an Audible subscription, and somehow when I looked it up, it gave it to me for free, and I don't even have a credit available. So,
Yeah.
that's even something to
I think
look
it's sometimes
into.
with Prime, it gives you some breaks if you have Prime on Amazon and so on. Definitely not promoting Amazon, but that's the easiest place to get stuff sometimes.
And the audiobook is really good. I don't know, like, was it AI generated or
Yeah,
something?
AI.
And it's really like the voice doesn't sound robotic at all. It's very very well done.
Sounds like
So,
a middle-aged guy.
yeah, kind of
Yeah.
sounds a little bit like you
Yeah, a
maybe.
little.
So,
But
but yeah, so thanks for breaking down chapter two for us. Really appreciate that. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
yeah, I wish people would, like one guy on one of the groups that we sponsor, one of the guys said to me, "Well, you use the word divine, and I don't believe in God like that." And I said, I got to him kind of quickly and said, I don't, I don't, I think you misread what I understand. And so I got in touch with him and talked to him a little bit. But you may come to this book and say, that sounds like serious deconstruction and, healing and trauma informed and getting counseling and all that stuff. It sounds hard and big, and I don't know if I want to tackle that right now. I would say approach this as pulling the information that you need out of this book. You may not be ready for some of it, but I read Lies We Believe About God by Paul Young. And when I read that, there were some things I wasn't ready for, right? And so I threw out what I didn't, I wasn't ready
You weren't ready
for,
for.
and I took the things that I
You were ready
seriously
for.
wanted to consider. And I looked at that, and I hope that's how people view this book.
Yeah, and also, like when you write your books, when we've written some together, but it's too open conversation. It's not that, and I think most authors would agree with this, most podcasters, we're not looking for you to come swinging, right? Maybe, and again, I think that if it something wells up in you and you feel anger, take a step back. Your nervous system is talking to you. Why are you feeling that way? But definitely reach out, because we're willing to have conversations as long as they're mutually respectful, right?
Right.
We're not, I mean, we got out of the us and them mentality machine of that's what our experience was in organized religion. We're not here to continue that on. We're here to have real conversations and, be willing to listen and hear one another, even if we don't agree. We can do these things in a respectful manner.
We always close out the podcast saying this, but we really mean it. We want to encourage you to be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Pathios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.